welcome. You are here with Dr. Nilda Perez with Business Foresight, creating strategies towards your extraordinary future.
Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nilda Show. We are back again with another awesome guest. I'm excited about the person that we have today because today we're going to be talking about money. This is a subject that's very important to everyone, whether you have your own business or you're, whether you have your own business or you're, you know, even working a job, you really want to know how to use money. So I'm here with my co-host, Rachel Calderon. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, how are you?
Okay. So let me tell you about my guest. My guest today is Ronnie Vincenti. He's a former U.S. Marine and a vet for 8 years. He is a senior network engineer with Citrix, Cisco, Microsoft certified. He runs IT infrastructures for $80 million healthcare company for the last 10 years. After many years of struggling with understanding money and how it worked for him and making a lot of mistakes with his own money, he took to this journey. And this journey was, how can he best learn money, how it works, how it operates, how to actually keep it? And so this journey brought him to this actualization that you can actually manipulate money. You have to respect it, but you also have to manipulate it to work for you. So now he teaches how to have a healthy relationship with money, how to respect it, how to manipulate it, how to have it work for you, making him a money strategist. Ronnie is also married for 27 years to his childhood sweetheart. They've been friends for 34 years, and he is also a marriage coach and actually, he and his wife are marriage coaches, and he is an approved foster parent. You wonder, what does he do with his free time, or does he have any? So welcome, Ronnie. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much.
I am really excited to have you here. I have to tell you, the way that we met was through your mom. Through your mom bragging about how awesome her son is and all the things that you know and how brilliant you are. And I was like, okay, I need to meet this guy. And it was very interesting, your trajectory, the direction that you've gone, what you've done with your life has been very, very interesting. And I thought, you know what, this is noteworthy. We need to interview him. So tell me about your initial journey with money and what actually took you on this journey.
Okay. My initial journey with money was, like most people, was losing it. Was realizing that my parents and their parents before them, and like most of society, we're not taught what money is, how to handle money. So obviously you make a lot of mistakes. You know, 46 years old now, I made a lot of mistakes when I was 20, 22, 25, 30. Right. And those mistakes that people make with money don't necessarily need to happen, but that goes with knowledge. We're not taught how to manipulate money, manage money. We're not told as children, or even as young adults, how to properly manage money. We don't understand what money is. We don't know where it comes from, how it's created, how does it flow, where does it go? We don't understand these things. So of course, if you don't understand something and you're dealing with it, you're gonna make a lot of mistakes. And I learned those mistakes by, you know, getting scrapes and cuts and bruises and bumps in the form of seeing your account go up and down and left and right. Mm-hmm. Not truly understanding why it was doing that. It also goes into understanding how the banking system works, you know, the regulations, the things that exist in our society that dictate how money works and who controls it. You know, historically, money is supposed to be an exchange and a medium exchange. If I got something that you want, you have something that I want, and I want to be able to get those things. I sell carrots and you sell tacos. You know, we need to transact in something that is approved by both parties and understand what that is. So here comes money. You know,
right.
we have money now in society, and we purchase, we buy, we loan, we lend. But if you don't know what to do with that money, trust me, it'll disappear. It'll burn a hole. I got a daughter. I love my daughter. She can't hold money. It's like magic. It just disappears. I have a son though. He's like a miser, so he'll do fine. But you have to understand what money is and how it works to be able to direct it for you to benefit, to grow your portfolio, to grow your your retirement to be a successful individual, whether it's business or personal. Money's money. The same way you handle money in your home, the same way you handle money in business. The same mistakes will have the same effects. The same lack of knowledge will yield the same results, good or bad.
Okay.
So let me ask you this then. What is money?
Money actually just, it's like I said, it's a medium of exchange. Money has been things over time. It's been seashells, it's been rocks, it's been tulips. Today, we allow the Federal Reserve to call money a Federal Reserve note, which we call a dollar bill. This Federal Reserve note, which they classify as money, which is not really money, because money has specific qualities and properties that a U.S. dollar, even though it tries to emulate what we as society in this day call money, is not. Yes, money can be exchanged. Yes, our money is recognizable. Yes, our money is increments. It can be traded. But the properties and qualities of money, there's two things that are lacking, according to the Constitution, according to what things are. The money is not indestructible. It's not very durable. It's paper. Paper dissolves. So that lacking that quality alone makes it fall out of the category of actually being money. We use a currency. We don't use money. Gold and silver is money. But our society or our government removed gold and silver from the monetary system in 1971. So we don't deal with real money anymore. We deal with a currency called money. And that itself causes a lot of problems. Allowing an entity to call something, it's called fiat currency. We deal with a fiat currency. We are a fiat currency. All money is fiat currency. It's because currency is dictated by an entity, which is the government, to say this has a value and this is the value of X, this is the value of Y, this country has it, that country has it, and we do commerce together using this fiat currency as we know as money.
Okay. So what is the best way to actually use money? First of all, you're saying we should become knowledgeable about what it actually is and what we're actually doing in our transaction with money.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then with that said, where do we go from there? So now we begin to understand money. We have an idea of what it is and what that exchange means. How do we actually use it? What is the best way to use it?
Right.
Well, we all have to buy and sell, but.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we're taught, I mean, the best way obviously to grow your money is you'll hear people say things like, you know, you got to be in the market, you got to do this, you got to do that. It's not about timing the market. It's not about catching the right wave, because you can never do this. I don't care how good you are. I watch pros all day and they miss just as good as they don't miss. I can miss too, and I'm not a professional. So it's not about timing money or timing events. It's about being in a system over time using compounding interest, which is the eighth one of the world. Compounding interest is a glorious thing. Over time, being in the market through those ups and through those downs, which we all don't like, but the time you leave yourself in the market, you do better than coming out of the market. So like when you had a 2001 or 2005, 2008 crash in the market and the stock market fell and your value of your accounts fell, it was painful. But if you pulled your money out of the market, like I did, I made those same mistakes, you actually come up worse. You lose because remember, even though the money fell, even though your value of your account falls, the quantity of what you have does not. I love dividend paying stocks or ETFs or anything that gives me money to hold it helps. That's part of the compounding interest, because you can have, you can be in the market and you can gain or you can lose. But if you have a dividend paying something, whatever that loss is or gain is, that dividend will actually supplement that. So if you take a slight loss, but the company pays you a dividend, sometimes it zeroes out. Not understanding this early on, I made those mistakes of trying to get in out of the waves, and I kept getting hit on the beach because I kept missing the wave. I've listened to many people that are out there, professionals. They all come to the same consensus. You have to be in the market. It kind of stinks when you see your value decrease, that pit in your stomach. It's different from when you're 20 to when you're 60. If you're 20 years old, you can take a hit. And it's like, I'm down half. You got 50 years. If you're 60, 70 years old, those hits, they hurt more because you don't have the time to recover. even though being in assets or equities or bonds that over time will yield more because you have to be there, it is painful to watch. And it mm-hmm. takes the discipline to say, you know what? I lost a quarter of my value. Oh, look, things are on sale. That's the mindset I did not have, is that we all do this. We inherently, when you see something that's negative or decreasing, you run from it. And in the market, you're not supposed to run from it. You're actually supposed to gravitate towards it. So if you see like, you have an Apple or an IBM and it takes a hit and you lose half the value, Apple isn't going anywhere. IBM isn't going anywhere. That's the time when you actually, what they call it, they coined the phrase backing the truck up. You want to buy more of those things, especially those things.
They call
it dollar cost averaging down or dollar cost averaging up.
If
you buy something at X dollars and it loses half its value, and you buy more now at the half value, when it returns back to where you lost that money from, you're exponentially increasing your gain, because you're getting the money back that you lost, and you're getting the fact that you bought something at a discounted price. So when it comes back to where you lost money, you compound up. That's the thing a lot of people just don't get. And it takes time and discipline and
a
poker face to understand that.
Okay. So I have a question, because this is something that comes up a lot. People say, you know what, I'm 45, I'm 50, I'm 60. This, you know, I guess it's too late. It's too late. I can't do this now. I guess I missed, you know, that prime opportunity.
Right.
Would you agree with that?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's never too late. Because again, if you look throughout historical time periods where the market returns, if you look at the gains and the losses, yeah, there's some years that have done excellent. 50% return, like 2011 and 12 were great years. Right after the stock market crash in 9, when everything bottomed out, you could have bought Ford for like $5, and you could have got AT&T for $12. Those are the best times to get things. So even if you're 60, 70 years old, you're gonna have ups and downs in the market. Things, even in a down market, you can make money. Even especially up market, it's easy. You throw your money at a wall and it sticks and it goes.
Right.
In a down market, it's difficult because everything is depreciating. So you don't know where to go. But that's when you fall back on companies that, you know, are not going anywhere. Apple isn't going anywhere. Microsoft isn't going anywhere.
Okay.
And this is how you make money. Even if you're 60, 70 years old, it does get a little hairy because, again, you have to look at the world economy. The world economy and the things that are going on geopolitically, economically, might not fall into line with your retirement plans. Because if you want to retire in 5 years and we're at war, it might not be the best timing for you. That's unfortunate. But if you stay in it, and you buy those assets when they're down, when they do recover, you're exponentially increasing what you're going to have on the other side of that. So you have to be in it. Regardless of what goes on, you have to be in it.
Okay, fantastic.
Ronnie, I know that oftentimes they have said that we do not own our own money that's in the bank. And I know that for me, if I've had to take out some money from my savings for whatever reason, they have actually sent out letters stating, like, you know, you cannot continue to do that. Not that I do it often, but it's like I get like this warning.
Right.
What is that about? Because I could kind of see that it's like my money that I put in the bank.
Right.
However, you're telling me how I cannot take money that belongs to me out.
Yes. Because most of money, I would probably say in the realm of 90% of money, does not exist in physical form, it's digital. When you put your money into the bank, or this fiat currency, or these dollar bills, or these things that we consider money, and you put them back into the entity that created them, because all money is created by the flick of a pen. Money isn't created the way it was back. We don't go out and find gold and put it in the bank and say this dollar represents that gold coin or that silver coin. It's a computer, it spits it out, we sell a bond, the bond is then sold at auction, and money is created. So when you go to the bank and you want to pull out something physical, they have a heart attack because they don't have enough of the physical. It doesn't exist. When you put your money in the bank, you become a tertiary party. You become a secure creditor, an unsecured creditor is what they're calling it, because you don't own that money. Once you turn that physical thing back into the entity of the bank, it's theirs. If the bank went belly up, you would be third or fourth or fifth in line to get your money back. because you don't own that money. We use fractional reserve banking, which says the bank is allowed, mind you, if you do this, you go to jail. The bank is allowed to do fractional reserve banking, which means they only have to have a certain money on hand, physically in the bank, on deposit. So if the bank is, you deposit $1 million in the bank, that same bank can now produce $1 million in loans. But the money you put in, if you try to get that $1 million back, I had a problem building a home, trying to pull out $35,000 to pay my broker, to pay my contractor. And I once went to jail because I wanted my $35,000. And I wasn't leaving until I got my $35,000 to pay this man. I didn't understand money at that point. I didn't understand what was going on. Why are you telling me I can't get my money? You had no problem accepting when it was deposited via check. But you have a huge problem giving to me back in physical form because the bank didn't have it. I didn't understand that back then. Banks don't, this is why you don't rob a bank. There's no money in banks. There's very little money in physical form in banks versus what's in the money supply. There's bazillions and trillions of dollars in the money supply. They don't sit in physical form, they sit in digital form. So again, when you take this physical asset or this tangible piece of paper we call money and you put it back into the hands of the people that created it, you no longer own that. Because you, like I said, if you don't hold it, you don't own it. You might've heard that phrase throughout life with different things, because it's relating between something that's physically in your possession, intangible, versus something that is digital and created in this digital world we live in. So yes, you do not own money when you put it back into the bank. You can, and anyone out there that hears this, I had a problem trying to relay that sentiment to many people. Google it, prove it, check me, please, check my information.
Right.
You don't own that money, I promise you. When you go into the bank and you ask for that, they can fill out what they call a suspicious activity report, a SAR report. Anything that makes them think, why would this person want to take out cash? Why can't you just pay digitally? Everyone's a terrorist today. So when you want that money, they assume that you want that money for nefarious reasons, that you are not a good steward of your own money. Why would you need this physical money? Why can't you just use a check or use a card or pay? They don't understand that. And the problem is we have a generation that doesn't understand that either. So there's this big wealth knowledge, this big gap of knowledge that people don't get. And the biggest eye-opening thing for me was, what do you mean I don't own what I just gave you? And that's a shock to a lot of people, but it's a factual piece of information.
Okay, fantastic. I love this. So
how do you get around from something like that then? You know, I mean, because I'm curious, you know, like right now my son, he's saving money. How do you get around that so that he can, at a later date, can withdraw from the money that he actually worked hard for to put away?
It's a sad thing, because if you look at throughout history and how America's created and how the Constitution said money was money, we used to weigh big piles of gold with big scales and say this bank had X dollars because the bank had something physical. We don't have that these days. Everything is digital. Even if you were to hoard a pile of cash in your house, something physical, paper, even if you never used the bank and you never used digital, and you just took all your stuff and did like grandma did and put it under your mattress. At any point in time, this has happened throughout history, at any point in time, they can null and void that piece of paper that you think is money. So it's very difficult these days to say, what do you do for the next decade, 2 decades, 3 decades? We're heading into a system, into a world where paper and physical will no longer exist. It's just a fact of nature. There are things you can do to kind of mitigate those risks. Personally, I tell people, and I do it myself, is you have to have something that's physically recognizable and will never, ever lose value and is known throughout the world that will still represent you saving your hard-earned money. Because money really is, it's our labor, which is translated into this thing we call money. How do you preserve that wealth that you created, your paycheck, your investments? How do you preserve that against an economic disaster, a bank failing, a fire?
Mm-hmm.
It has something that's physical. It has to be physical. I love gold and silver. The markets talk about gold and silver like it's the Antichrist, because it is the Antichrist. Gold and silver destroys markets that are manipulated by bankers. This is why they went away from gold and silver. I love gold and silver. The Bible loves it. Throughout history and time, everyone in this planet has loved gold and silver because it is real. You can take gold into the mountains of Argentina or to the valleys of any other country, and you pull that little shiny piece of chunk out, and they'll know exactly what it is, and they'll be willing to transact with you. In this world, we don't do that because everything is digital now, and the banks, again, banks hate gold and silver because it destroys this digital realm they created. When we left the gold and silver being tied to our American currency, our American dollar, it opened up this big problem we have now, which is the whole world and the markets they're all upside down. You hear about it on the news all the time that banks are printing right. money.
You
hear
absolutely, it. Yes, you do. Yes.
What do you mean printing money? What does that mean? It used to be something physical. Yes, we did physically print money. We still physically print these dollars now. But again, most money is digitally created. So when you remove the binding of that gold, which was tied to a specific amount of money or a dollar, or they used to call them silver notes and gold notes. When you remove that relationship, it allows the banking system to do whatever they want with money because there's no rules anymore. There's no check and balance. And gold and silver being tied to the monetary system before 1971, at least for America, was a check and a balance. You couldn't explode the debt. You couldn't spend money because you didn't have the gold to support it. We don't have that anymore. But I tell you what, gold and silver, no matter where you go in this country, in this planet, will be accepted and somebody will transact with you.
Okay, fantastic. I know that you teach this. How can, are there tools, are there sites? Where do people go to get this information? And also, other than to you, because clearly you have a lot of knowledge when it comes to this. And I think, I have to tell you, I think if people would just learn about money, how it works, what it brings to the table, what it doesn't, that in and of itself, that one thing to me is priceless. So how can we get to that? How can people start learning about that?
The great thing about now in this world that we live in today, everything is so instantaneous at your fingertips. I didn't have Google when I was 19 years old. When I was in the Marine Corps, there was no, Wikipedia. There wasn't any robo advisors. There wasn't any digital investing platforms. You had, these old tried and true. You had like Charles Schwab and Fidelity. There was nothing other than those things. And that right. knowledge was secret. It was hidden. It wasn't disseminated. There was no way to get that knowledge. There was no YouTube back then. Today, it's the exact opposite. There are dozens of sites. I actually pay for research for a couple of sites. And these guys are market experts. They've been doing this for decades. They've left the banking system. They started their own companies. They advise and they hold millions and billions of dollars in assets. They manage money for some of the wealthiest people in the country. And these guys started their own companies and their own research firms. And I subscribe to a lot of these research firms because I wanted information from everywhere. I wanted to know from right. left to right, up and down, so I can decide for myself what's real, what's right, and learn about everything fast forward. Two of the best sites that I currently use now is something called Motley Fool, and another one is called, Contrarian Outlook is one, Seeking Alpha is one. They put all this knowledge together and they do these articles and they invite professionals to do opinions and to do analysis. I suck this up as well as anybody else. And mm-hmm. a lot of it can be overwhelming in the beginning if you don't understand the terms.
That was going to be my point. Because, you've been studying money for quite some time now. But for a novice to get this kind of information, it's just as well that they not have it because it's so overwhelming.
Right.
And so, getting on these sites is not necessarily the best idea because right. oftentimes they get, at the end, they end up more confused than not. Would you agree, Rachel?
Absolutely. Okay. I think that they should because at least they can begin to learn the terminology, right. but they will be very confused at first.
Well, a way to supplement that too is YouTube. There's a lot of guys that do, and a lot of channels that I follow on YouTube, and a lot of them are people I listen to, like Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, used to be the treasury secretary for Rake. He does tons of interviews. Now, a lot of stuff talks about monetary policy and banking. Again, you can start small and just listen to these guys. And I promise you, it'll sink in eventually. When you hear a phrase or term two times, you hear the context in which it's being discussed, you will go, ah, that's what he means. And then there's this thing called Google, and you can Google any word or term you don't get to understand the direction of a conversation. There's a channel called SGT Report. Excellent channel. He interviews everybody. So you get different points of view from low level to high level information in more technical language and very basic language. But you have to immerse yourself in these things to start understanding the verbiage, the terms, and the context. Once you understand that, when you watch the news and you hear something going on in the world, it makes perfect sense to you. And at that point, you can direct how you use your money or your investments based on what you hear. People get these news feeds from the media. You can watch CNBC all day. If you don't understand what they're talking about, you can't take advantage of situations. And we have situations every single day. There's a situation and an opportunity. And if you don't understand the words or the terminology or what's going on, you're like deer in the headlights.
Yeah, but I think that there's also that thing called Google.
Yes.
That, you know, we all now have access to that you can take advantage of that. But like you said, back in the days, it was not,
right?
You know, we didn't have that. But now there's no reason why we should not be researching these things.
Oh, there's no excuse. I tell people all the time, if you can tell me the weight of Jay-Z's baby or the last outfit they bought or where they won or her birthday, but you can't tell me the interest rate you're earning on an investment, you have a problem. Because Jay-Z's baby is going to be okay. You might not be.
So you need to.
Exactly.
Good point. Great point. Yeah.
Jay-Z
is making money. And Jay-Z, you know, he was a thug. But, you know, he did his thing. And he had people manage his money for him.
Right.
And now he's a billionaire. So,
right.
You know.
Right.
I'm worried about me. Not all these superfluous, stupid little things going on that the media used to distract our attention. I go to bed at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning every night because my brain doesn't turn off because I'm reading and watching and listening and learning and planning and projecting. That's what I do. My wife tells me I'm crazy. I don't sleep. If I have a question in my mind about something, I can't go to bed. And I find myself 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning going, you got to go to sleep.
I get that. I totally get that.
I have to absorb it. I have to get it because my brain won't turn off if I don't get that answer.
Okay. I am an innovator and what I do is foresight and I'm always looking for future projections or whatever. I want to ask you a question. It's probably a little bizarre, but I think you would understand it. And the question is, where do you see this economy going, given that they want to make it a one world economy?
Okay, there's another part of me that you don't know. I'm a big conspiracy theorist. I love a good conspiracy.
This is biblical. Like, this is totally biblical, but
it absolutely is.
Okay.
So, I don't want to get on that platform too much, but I will say
okay.
This.
Just a couple of seconds on this. Okay.
Definitely. I mean, you talk about this one world, new world economy. You know,
right. One world.
Right. You want to buy. Whether you accept the mark of the beast, yada, yada, yada. People think that this literal translation of having a chip in your hand or that's what's going to come out of the world because that's not here yet. Wrong, folks. Because if you have one of these in your hand, you already have a chip in your hand. And it's with you every day. I do everything on this device. Everything.
Yes.
And the sad thing about it is people don't realize we're here. Exactly. We are here. PayPal.
Absolutely.
Venmo. You name it. We're here.
Right. Right.
Digital can't buy a process. It's already here. And the sad thing about it is, yes, it was in the Bible a long time ago, and people refer to it like it's not actually happening. But in this last 2 decades, to see where we were to where we are right now, if you don't see that this is, that what was in that book is actually manifested, I don't know what to tell you, because it's literal. It's here. In a decade, okay. I don't see much of anything physical being here. And it scares me. It scares me. That's why I cling to my gold and silver, because I don't care what happens, I still have my gold and silver. But
right. This
digital one world order, it's if you look what goes on in the world, it's there every single day. We all have Federal Reserve banks in every country.
Right.
That wasn't an accident. That was a plan that they did 300 years ago. You know, read about Mr. Rothschild and how he taught his children how to share and lend money to corporations. That's where we are today. Right. That seed grew, and this is where we are right now. We are sad. This one world economy, it's here.
It's here.
It's here.
It's here.
It's right. Scary, but
okay.
I think as much knowledge about it is about the best thing you can do is understand what you're looking at. It's right. Not, can't stop it. I mean, it's biblical. Right. Can't stop it, and it's manifested. It's already here. So
right. And understanding money in terms of biblical principles also, because at the core, that's what it is. I mean, God has always talked about money, Genesis, from Genesis to Revelation. It's always been a topic because it is how the world runs.
Yep.
So no matter what money looks like, it is how the world runs. So that's I love your answer. Thank you very much. I thought I'd throw you off there, but that was good. You were on point. I love it.
I love this stuff. You get it? Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. So what services, and this is the last question, what services should we be using? What brokers, what versus self-driven? What should we be using?
I like using everything that comes out to get my own personal point of view on how things work. And the best things that I've used for myself and for my family, because I've tried them, I like them, they work well. I've used all the brokers from Fidelity, Schwab, Cap One. I've used them all, Ameritrade. And I have a mix. I do computers. My job is to provide fault tolerance to maintain something to stay up 24/7. That's my job. Disaster recovery is part of my job. It's the same thing with finances. You don't put all your eggs in one basket. You spread them across multiple providers and multiple types of companies. I use Schwab for a third of my portfolio. I like Schwab because it has the cheapest trading that you're gonna get, $5. I love the tools they give you. They're free tools. And you look like almost a market pro. They're absolutely free. I love the information. I love the guidance. I love the reports. And it's very easy to understand. For my retirement, I personally use Betterment. Betterment is a robo-advisor. I like them because they're very simple. They use what most of these robo guys use. It's called Modern Portfolio Theory, MPT. It's an algorithm that was designed to say what to do with money when this happens here, move money there. It does it on the fly. I put money in, I set my allocation, my risk factor, and they break up my money based on my risk factor, and I don't worry about it no more. I love Roth IRAs. I do not like 401ks or mutual funds. If you got a mutual fund, that's great. I don't like the fees in mutual funds. They're too expensive. There's a caveat. If your company matches dollar for dollar, use whatever that is. I don't care if it's a mutual fund or 401k. If someone's giving you free money, take it. I use also a robo-advisor called Wealthfront. These are two very inexpensive, very cheap robo-advisors. They have two different algorithms, which is why I use two, because again, I like divide and conquer. So I like the algorithm for robo that they use for one, and I like the algorithm for Wealthfront, because it's kind of different. The allocations are a little different. So I'm kind of doing some little fault-tolerant manipulation there. I've tried some new products, some very phone-based kind of utilities. There's a product called Robinhood. If you want to buy stocks and you want to learn and you want free, I love free, but I also do like results. Robinhood is a beautiful app. It doesn't cost a dime. You can buy and sell. It doesn't cost you a penny. That is great for anyone learning, because there's no point in paying a Schwab or Fidelity $7, $8 for a trade and you don't understand things. Learn with a free application. Robinhood is free. It's great. I'm doing beautifully in my Robinhood app because I understand things. So it allows me to act like a trader. I can buy and sell back and forth all day acting like a trader. So I can take advantage of things. There's two more utilities that I just started using. And I'm about to do a little a piece on both these little applets. It's called Stash Invest and M1 Finance. These are both apps that are on your Android platform or your Apple platform. And the Stash Invest is for the person who doesn't know a lot, knows they need to do something, doesn't want to pay a lot, and you can put in $5 at a shot. It's beautiful. So if you and the investments that they have are very straightforward, very simple. You kind of pick through, you can read a little about them, and if you choose to use that particular, they use ETFs. They give the ETFs pretty names so people can kind of understand what they are. But ETFs all have ticker symbols, 4 letters or 5 letters. People don't get that. If I told you go buy SCHD, like, what's that? If I told you go buy, you know, Dividend Buddies, oh, I can find Dividend Buddies and you can invest in me. Costs $1 a month after initial 3 months, but $1 a month to buy and sell as much as you want is nothing. And the last tool is M1 Finance. I like them because you, what they do is they simulate ETFs without the cost of an ETF. When you buy an ETF inside of your 401k, your mutual fund, you have to pay the fee to hold that ETF. It's called an expense ratio. So M1 Finance allows you to build your own ETF and not pay an expense ratio. So again, these are two tools. I've been testing them recently and they're doing very well. But again, I like diversifying. I like splitting my things up. I like my money to ride in different avenues, mm-hmm. up together or down together. But I don't like putting all my eggs in one basket. So
I love it.
There's stuff out there, but those are my favorites.
Okay, excellent.
Excellent.
So I want to thank you, and I look forward to having you back, and possibly, you know, in this conversation with you, the more I talk to you, I realize it would be great for us to probably do like some kind of webinar with this information. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that and what that will look like, but we'll do that privately. I want to thank you for being here. I want to thank you for sharing your wealth of information. I feel a little overwhelmed because you understand this so well. I'm sort of a novice in this area. You know, I just started out not very long ago. And again, it takes a lot of studying, and I study so many things that I think this has been in the back burner. I think I should bring it to the front.
Absolutely.
So, again, I want to thank you. I want to thank you so much for your wealth of information. And I would like to, I would like to invite you back. I would like to have you back soon and see where we can go from there. You know, what else we can have. And again, this information is excellent.
That'd be great. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. So, again, thank you so much for being here. I want to let everyone know that next week we will have another guest. We look forward to... You know, again, another fabulous guest. I am just really blessed to have known and continue to learn from different people and bringing all of these awesome guests to you. I'll see you again next week. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
I want to thank you for being with us on Business Foresight, always creating strategies towards an extraordinary future. Remember, I'm here with you with strategies every Saturday. I'll see you next week.